I guess it was the grain harvests and the grinding of the seed into flour on such an extensive scale. The reserves of flour that were made by people, the reserves of grain that were stored in secure vessels. It was a real agricultural economy. That's what took me by surprise. I knew a fair bit about the yam. I had no idea it was as extensive as it was. Around Hutt River in Western Australia, the yam fields stretched to the horizon. You get to the end of one of them and there was another one stretched to the horizon. They were huge.
It's often been thought and taught that Aboriginal people were simply hunter-gatherers, that you'd be picking fresh fruit in season, moving on to the next area of land with the next available fruit harvest or animals available. But you, in this research, have been drawing on first-hand accounts of a very much more settled way of life for many language groups, haven't you?
Yeah, there certainly was a lot of movement around, but there was also a lot more sedentary living than we were led to believe. And, I've got a biased opinion on that, perhaps, but I believe that the fact that we ignored all that information about Aboriginal agriculture, permanent housing, towns, housing 1,000 people. I think that was ignored because it was evidence of occupation. Now, some people might get upset when you say something like that, but it seems pretty obvious to me that that's the case, and I think it's pretty hard to argue against it.
Can you give me some more examples, Bruce, about how the land and plants were harvested, even manipulated to yield in a method that is akin to what we would call farming?
Well, in regards to yam, we had those huge yam fields in Western Australia that had wells in between them to irrigate those plants. But George Augustus Robinson, one of the Aboriginal protectors in Victoria, looked down over plains where women were harvesting yam with their children, and he said they were like sheep dotted across the plain. That's a lot of people harvesting a lot of plants and, in a very organised fashion. Other explorers saw women harvesting onion grass, in a line, digging with their trowels and, cultivating the land in a really organised fashion. On the Warburton River, Charles Sturt, the Australian explorer, was dying. He had scurvy. They'd eaten most of their horses. The other ones could hardly walk. And they came across one last sandhill. And they could only stumble down this sandhill. They couldn't walk. And Sturt said, if those people that we saw there, because they'd just seen 300 Aboriginal people, 400 on the plain below them, if those people had any evil intent, we were dead. But the people came up to them with coolamongs full of fresh water that they'd got out of their permanent well that they had constructed. They fed the men, they fed the horses. Then they gave them roast duck and cake and asked them to select one of the houses on the other bank of that river. That's an extraordinary account of a civilised society and a generous society and a productive society. I don't know how Australia can get by without remembering what one of our most famous explorers, Charles Sturt, saw.
Australia has very much had to grapple in many ways with its modern history and the case of the past, and even overturning terra nullius has taken a long time. Do you think that by publishing something like Dark Emu Black Seeds that it also helps in that education process of overturning some of those past ignorances and injustices and looking again on the way Australia has been lived upon for many, many, many years?
Yeah, it's we're missing out on a lot if we don't remember these things and learn from them, such as these plants like the grains that were largely gluten-free, the yam daisies, which you can still grow, but there's only half a dozen people growing growing them, to my knowledge. And these are commercial crops that can be grown. But I hope that when they become commercial crops, that Australia remembers the Aboriginal people who altered the genome of those crops and made them productive.
My guest this morning on the program is Bruce Pascoe, and he's just recently published through Mugabulla Books, Dark Emu, Black Seeds, Agriculture or Accident. And it very much looks at the systems of land management, ways of harvesting from the sea and from the land, huge amounts of food for large numbers of Aboriginal families and language groups right across Australia. Bruce, you also write, substantial dwellings were built from flat slabs of sandstone in the Kimberley. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, that's a record that we get from one of the explorers. I'm just trying to think who it is now. I can't remember offhand. But he saw these buildings that were made out of stacked slabs of sandstone covered with beams of timber and the whole roof covered in thatch and quite often being covered in clay, so it was like a render across the roof. On a high cliffy island on the coast of WA, there were many stone huts and houses that were built there for, they're not quite sure, the archaeologists, but perhaps they should ask the local Aboriginal people. Obviously, it was a fishing community over there.
You also cite another example, Dennis Foley of the Guy Marigal people north of Port Jackson remembers being shown large dwellings of stone, and the walls were built from stone and clay, the floors covered in soft paper bark and ferns, the buildings approximately 6 metres by 4 and 1.5 metres high, and that after a smallpox plague, the buildings were burnt out by soldiers. So clearly a very permanent, substantial setting for people to live in. They weren't always on the move, as perhaps we have assumed.
That's right. In Victoria, there were several houses that settlers entered that would hold over 50 people. Now, in the town that I come from, that's a town hall. Now, these are big buildings. They've got several central poles to keep the roof up. They're really large buildings, and I never learned it when I was at school. My son never learned it. My daughter never learned it. And the kids that I see in Mallacoota, where I live now, they don't learn it. So why is that? Why are we not telling Australian children of the success and the achievements of Aboriginal Australia?
Do you expect this book will change the way people view Aboriginal systems before European settlement, Bruce?
I hope so. I've got high hopes, and I think a lot of Australians want more information. They've just found it very hard to get. So I'm really hoping that this will be something that will help them, just as Bill Gammage's book, The Biggest Estate, helped change people's perceptions.